This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Friday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. Let's begin, though, with the big economic story of the day. Alisa mentioned this, the big government jobs report. Let's get some context. Diane Swonk is joining us, chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago. Diane, 266,000 jobs in November. Give us some context here. Is this good? Is this good enough? What do you make of this?
Well, it certainly is good. It's even great in some ways. I think we do have to take into account the bounce back in employment in the from the General Motors strike. That added almost 60,000 back into the labor force. But even stripping that out, that's still north of 200,000 jobs gained during the month, which is very important. I think it's interesting to see, absent the GM strike bounce back, manufacturing activity was still very weak. Yet that weakness is not spread into the service sector. The service sector has been coming back. We saw leisure and hospitality hires pick up, really driven by gains in food services. That means consumers are willing to step out a bit and hopefully step it up a bit. They had traded down to less expensive restaurants over the summer. Now we're hoping they're trading back into spending a little more freely with the discretionary dollars with that higher consumer sentiment number we saw in the early December as well. The other part of the index is we saw increases in healthcare. Healthcare is really being driven by the over 80 crowd, a lot of them out there, and aging baby boomers, but nonetheless adding to jobs. And again, gets to the story of the manufacturing sector still weak, but the service sector carrying it. The consumer is playing Atlas and carrying the U.S. economy right now.
Well, and let's talk about that consumer sentiment. That's also heading higher.
That was a big, nice improvement in consumer sentiment and really tied to a sort of idea that we are going to see some kind of phase one deal with China, that we won't see the escalation in trade tariffs and the escalation in tensions that we had seen a year ago. Remember, it was a year ago at this time that consumers literally disappeared from the retail stores, stopped buying during the holiday season. In fact, retail sales flatlined in December relative to the year prior in 2018 because of those trade fears. Now we have a 180. Not only do the trade fears look like they're dissipating, although I would say they certainly, we haven't resolved our issues with China and those will remain hanging over us next year. But if we can at least get a pause and hit the pause button on trade tensions, that allows the consumer to move forward instead of what we saw last year where they actually pulled back in the month of December. We also have the Federal Reserve has done a 180 and cut rates by three times this year. And remember, a year ago at this time, not only had they raised rate a fourth time for the year, they thought they were going to increase rates two times in 2019. That's now what we're seeing now. So I think those shifts are very important and have given consumers an extra boost here at the end of the year, a much needed boost as we go into the holiday season.
Good insight, as always. Thank you so much, Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago, talking about some pretty good data numbers. Coming up, the latest trends in drinking, why beer seems to be losing its punch. Americans certainly going to do some drinking over the holidays. New research, though, shows beer is getting some potent competition. We're talking with Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com, based in Los Angeles. Phil, tell us what the latest surveys are telling us about alcohol. What are they drinking?
Well, what's interesting, Cisco, is that beer sales are down. They're actually down almost 5%. And what's so important about this is beer is the largest category when it comes to alcoholic consumption at about $115 billion a year. So a loss of 4.6%, that's over $5 billion a year. So what we see are Budweiser, these major brands, really panicking. Now, about 24% of all beer sales are now craft beer, and that's actually up. But the things to really look for are some of the new categories like the hard seltzers. You know, critically, they are a very small percentage now, but they're growing by leaps and bounds. And also, and Cisco, I don't want you to try this, canned wine is also really hot.
Wait, that's a thing?
That's the thing. And in fact, if you think back, you know, probably about 30 years ago, it was tried then. We weren't ready for it. It didn't go well. But now canned wine is a little over $54 million a year. Nielsen's actually reporting a 73% increase. But again, it's on a very, very small base. So really the thing to look at is this decline in beer and where those beer drinkers are going, because overall, alcohol consumption is up when you take beer out. So we're drinking more cocktails, we're drinking more canned wine, more of these hard seltzers. And frankly, I think the hard seltzers are really going to be the major hit in the category. They're lower in calorie, they're light in flavor, and frankly, people don't think that they're really drinking anything. So they're able to get a buzz on probably a little quicker.
Yeah, and that was actually one of my questions for you. Why the switch? And I did wonder if calories were a part of it. People, they still want a tasty beverage and they still want something with alcohol in it. They just don't want it to be as caloric.
Correct. It's not only calories, but again, keep in mind, in the case of beer, people want to get rid of carbs as much as they can. So it's both. It's that health and wellness aura that really talks about calories, it talks about carbs, and in some cases, talks about sugars. Because don't forget, after January, we're going to have a new nutritional labeling that really calls out added sugars. So we're even going to see that on some of these beverages, especially the pre-made cocktails that are out there.
So this really comes down to these companies that make the beer continuing to diversify. I'm thinking it's like the tobacco companies with vaping when that really took off. You can kick and scream if you want, or you can just figure out how to make money on the new trend.
Yeah, they have to diversify or they're going to die. You know, when you're starting to lose money like this, and frankly, the beer sales have been declining for the past 4 or 5 years. So these companies really have to diversify. They have to innovate. They have to have all these new products out there. And the question is whether or not we as consumers would rather buy these new products from small companies, or do we want to buy it from people like Coors and Anheuser-Busch?
All right, Phil Lempert, always good to have you on the show. Phil is founder of SupermarketGuru.com in Los Angeles. On Wall Street, the Dow up 346 points. The NASDAQ is up 89, and the S&P is up 32 points. We have a mix of sun and clouds in Chicagoland, high of 39 degrees. Right now, it's 37 degrees. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. If you want to be a part of our 24th annual WBBM Good Neighbor Radiothon, benefit the Salvation Army, it's very easy for you to give a gift of any size. You can call 844-361-8400. That's 844-361-8400. Or you can go online to our website, wbbmnewsradio.com/donate. The markets are surging higher today on the back of a solid government jobs report. Let's talk about it with Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter based in Hammond. Chuck, what are you seeing on Wall Street today?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. This is a, you know, real nice jobs report that kind of gives further evidence that, we're not slipping into a recession, and that the jobs environment is still positive, that translates to a pretty strong consumer, and, things are still pretty good on that end. You know, the biggest fear, quite frankly, that was really hindering the market earlier was the notion that we were slipping into a recession. That was the thing that was, you know, top of mind for a lot of investors when they were making investment decisions here. And, you know, what we have seen now over the last couple of months have been data points that indicate that, you know, that fear has subsided dramatically. And thus you've got investors emboldened to go buy stocks. And that's what they're doing today.
And it's pretty broad based is what we're seeing.
It is. You know, when you look at, the major indices, large caps like the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones Industrial Average. But what you're also seeing are some more economically sensitive areas of the market, like transportation stocks, for example, are up very nicely today. Small caps are up very nicely today. So, yes, it's broad based. And those are the best types of advances, quite frankly, because they show the kind of broad-based strength that generally has legs and not just when you see one particular segment of the market doing well.
Well, you see a lot of people working and even consumer sentiment higher. Does that make you take a second look at retail stocks here as we're really in the thick of this holiday shopping season?
Well, I think so. But again, it's it's like real estate. You know, it's location, location, location. It's everything is very specific. I mean, there are retailers out there that you probably don't want to deal with at all. On the other hand, you know, there are certain brick-and-mortar retailers that I think are going to continue to do pretty well. You look at, you know, I think Walmart has demonstrated that it's more than up to the challenge of the Amazons of the world, and that's going to continue, to, I think, to do pretty well. You look at other more specialty retailers, those are doing pretty well. I would still shy away from some of the big brick-and-mortar kind of mall-based retailers. I think they still have, you know, a rough go ahead, but certainly there's opportunities in the retail space.
So in general, a lot of people have been giving sort of defensive advice just in case there's some sort of a recession on the horizon. Is that how you're feeling? Still a little more defensive, or is it maybe more mixed than that?
No, yeah, the defensive areas of the market had done quite well this year because you had that kind of mentality, and that was evident in the fact that when you looked at mutual fund inflows and outflows to equities, I mean, for virtually all this year, money's been flowing out of mutual fund, equity mutual funds, which indicated, you know, a lot of nervousness about this market. And a lot of the, you know, the quote, low volatility, defensive stuff did very well. We have seen a pretty significant pivot, though, in the market in the last 6 weeks that has really started to favor more economically sensitive kind of value stocks, so to speak. And I think that's a trend that we're seeing today, and I think that's something that's going to continue to go forward. So I don't think investors should be, you know, loading up on a lot of the low volatility stuff that actually has gotten stretched in valuations. And I think there's opportunities in the value space, and that would include, you know, industrials. That would include some of the transportation stocks, which have been beaten up. That'll include things like financials. I think the banks are still attractive in this environment.
Tech stocks, talk about those for a moment. Is it, like you say, you know, it just depends on location, location, location. Not all tech stocks are created equally.
And that's true. I think, though, that you can still find pretty good, you know, opportunities there. You look at a stock like Google, for example, which at first blush doesn't seem like your quintessential value stock, but when you break down their kind of the growth of the company versus what you pay for that growth, that's still fairly reasonably valued. I think a stock like Apple that has had a big run, but again, when you break down the growth and expected growth, especially on the service side, and what you pay for that, you know, I think there's still opportunities out there. There are some areas also that have been stretched a little bit, and it's not too hard to go find the technology stock that's trading at, you know, 200 times earnings, and I would probably shy away from some of those. But, you know, some of the classic larger tech names that have done well this year, I think they can continue to do so.
What is the Dow theory telling us these days?
You know, we're right on the cusp of getting kind of that, you know, all clear sign. And the last piece that we've been waiting for has been the Dow Jones Transportation Average needing to get above what we feel is a previous important high of about 11099. And we got within a whisker of it here a few weeks ago. It pulled back. We're getting a pretty nice move today. We're probably within 2%. And, you know, we have been pretty invested in this market up to this point. But in order to kind of put those final chips into the pile, we really would love to see the Dow Transports go to a new high. So they haven't done it yet. They're close. And if they can close above 11098, that would be a bullish sign for us.
Thanks, Chuck. Always appreciate you being on the show. Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services. He's also the author of Winning with the Dow's Losers. Up next, Entrepreneur Friday, we'll talk about multi-generational mentoring and innovation.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday on the Noon Business Hour. WBBM, a proud sponsor of an upcoming seminar called Innovation for the Ages. The goal is to bring together the young and not so young for multi-generational mentoring. Joining us is Luke Tannen, Executive Director of the organization Chicago Innovation. Luke, I like this phrase, multi-generational mentoring. Ordinarily, when we think about mentoring, whether it's entrepreneurs or otherwise, we think about someone who's more experienced, mentoring someone who is less experienced. However, this mentoring, it sounds like it can go both ways.
That's exactly right. And that's why we launched this program in partnership with a group called the Village Chicago. It's called Ageless Innovators, and it's all to provide opportunities for people from different generations who are leaders to co-mentor each other, because no matter how old or how young you are, you can truly benefit from the perspective of a person from a different generation, from knowledge transfer that can go both ways. And the reason why this ties into innovation is that 85% of executives agree that a diverse workforce stimulates innovation. And so here we are focused on age as another dimension of diversity.
And so what is this like when you have an event like this? You're bringing people together. Is it sort of making connections? What can people expect if they go to this?
Yeah, so this event that you're mentioning, it's on December 10th. It's called Innovation for the Ages. It's sort of a celebration of people, in particular older adults, many of whom are over the age of 60, who are not retiring themselves, but in fact, they're reinventing themselves. So this event really is more so an educational opportunity for people to learn from those who, you know, really embrace the notion that it is never too late to innovate, it is never too late to try new things, to take new risks, to launch something new. And then concurrently throughout the year, we have this mentoring program. So we'll be talking about this mentoring program quite a bit. We're always looking to grow it. We had 50 leaders involved last year. We'll have 100 leaders involved this coming year. And just really looking for people who are open to the idea of learning from someone from a different generation and really interested in developing a greater sense of age-related empathy.
That's the key, isn't it? The willingness to learn from people of other generations, not thinking that your generation knows it all, regardless whether that's younger or older.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's people who are open to learning, open to sharing, open to being vulnerable, open to knowing that they don't know everything. And that's really what stimulates innovation, is that acknowledgement of, you know, we need people from different backgrounds to come together to all share different perspectives. And that's why it's really important for the economy today, from a workforce development standpoint, to really ensure that people from different ages, generations are working together to solve problems, to solve challenges. And so a new thing we'll be doing in 2020 is to connect with more businesses. And we've learned a lot from this Ageless Innovators program, where we believe there's a lot of best practices and teaching that can be applied to the workforce.
Well, it looks really, really interesting. Appreciate all the work that you're doing. Luke Tannen, Executive Director of Chicago Innovation. There's an event coming up, Multi-Generational Mentoring. It's called Innovation for the Ages. If you want more information on that, it happens next Tuesday, December 10th. Just go to the website, chicagoinnovation.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.